Let me invite you to just, if you haven't already, take a few deep breaths. And if you want to, you can allow your eyes to close or maybe just gaze downward in a soft gaze. And just allow yourself to arrive and to settle and maybe consider the words that we've just been singing about being love, being peace, being whole, and just being. Becoming aware of the sensation of breathing in and breathing out, allowing your awareness to expand to your body. Noticing if there's any areas of tension or sensation, maybe resistance. Maybe your mind is racing with thoughts of what's happening later on today or what happened yesterday. If that's going on, just allowing yourself to again come back to this present moment. Noticing any feelings, any emotions. The invitation is everything and everyone is welcome, just because. It's been said that peace is this present moment without judgment. So maybe noticing how it is to receive the moment here, right now, just as it is. Nothing to fix, nothing to change, nothing to manage or control, just allow. And maybe now taking a moment to send and offer some of the love and the peace that is within to those who are around you. Maybe those who are not here today. And gently allowing your awareness to come back and opening your eyes as you're ready.
Oh.
So nice to see all of you today. So nice to be back home here. And just, wow, feeling the energy, feeling the presence, feeling the goodness that's here. And yeah, I just get chills as I say that. Can celebrate Dia de los Muertos today and just everything that's happened all around that. And yeah, it's really, really good. And I just want to say thank you. Thank you for your presence here. Thank you for your participation here. Thank you if you're tuning in online. Yeah, it's just no place like home. I have been away the last couple of weeks at a family reunion and a wedding in Arizona and Southern California. So you can judge me and, yes, throw tomatoes and eggs, you know, what am I doing? What am I doing going there and leaving everybody up here to suffer in the cold and the wet? But I got to tell you, getting back yesterday, breathing the free, clear, clean air of Coeur d'Alene is just beautiful. Taking a walk this morning, and just amid all the leaves that are falling and the colors and everything like that, it's like there's no place like home. There's no place like home. And so it's really good to be here. So thank you. And thank you to just everybody. Again, I just want to reiterate the people that just do stuff around here and make these services possible behind the scenes, those who are mentioned and the many who aren't mentioned. It's just so appreciated. And I so appreciate and am inspired by the participation and the engagement of this community to make this happen. So it's really good to be here. I'm really happy and excited to continue in a message series. I want to thank Susie and Nancy, right? It was Susie and Nancy the last couple of weeks who filled in for me, and just am so grateful for that. Today, I want to continue on in a series of messages that really are part of a larger series of messages about living love and uplifting lives, because as Julie mentioned this morning, that's our aspiration here, to live love and uplift lives, to not just talk about love, to not just be all theoretical and philosophical about it, but to really become actionable and practical, and what does it mean to live, love, and uplift lives. And so what I am going to be doing today and for the next couple of weeks is taking a look at our five unity principles and visiting them afresh and anew. And my hope is that as we do that, that place of love in your heart will just be rekindled and re-sparked. And hopefully, if you're active and involved and encouraged here, you know, that'll just serve to strengthen that. If you're maybe feeling like, I don't know how I fit in here. I don't know about this community. I don't know what it's all about. Maybe these messages will inspire ways that you can give and become involved in the community here. So it's really, really good. I want to just, before I launch in, though, mention two resources that we have out here that I think are really, really good. And both of these are in the hallway on the wall as you come and leave the building here. But the first one is Honoring Our Unity Origins by Rachel Wooten. It's a three-page, three-page summary on just the, or actually 4.5 pages, I guess it is, yeah. Summary on just what is unity all about. And I think it's really well written. And if you haven't seen that yet or whatever, or just want to learn more about who we are, I would commend this article to you. You grab one of those. And secondly, a lot of people have asked me since I've been here, you know, what are our values? We don't know what our values are. And I'm like, well, I wonder what they are. And lo and behold, on the wall out there, there's a little piece that looks like this that talks about, guess what? Our values, spirit-centered, love, joy, abundance, peace. So as you can imagine, the way my mind thinks, I'm thinking maybe a series of messages just tuning back into these values and refreshing ourselves in those values would be good. But just want to offer those resources to you as supplements to our journey here. But let me just go ahead and get started with what I'm going to do today is take a look at our first two unity principles. And the first one is this: there is only one presence and power in the universe, God, omnipotent, omnipresent, and omniscient. And the second one is the presence of God dwells in each person. What I'd like to do is just offer a couple of reflections here. But first, that word God. How does the word God land for you? Anybody want to just, you know, duh, yeah, God, I mean, we're here, right? What are you asking me this question for? But but how does that, how does the word God land for you? Yeah?
I like to say source.
Source.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Thank you. Who else? God. What comes to mind? Yes.
Just that we're all one.
We're all one.
Not that there's really an ever-present God, but that we're all just really one.
Uh-huh. So, yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Who else? God. Yes.
God is everything you need.
God is everything you need.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yep. What else?
Yeah. Different take,
loaded and confusing. Thank you for that. Yes.
Very warm and comforting.
Warm and comforting. Yeah. Yeah. Jim, am I wandering too far off course, or is everything okay?
Yeah.
Okay. I like to wander in Rome, so yeah. All right. Good. Any others? God. The spiritual aspect of how the universe works. Yeah, yeah. There, we could talk all day about God, you know. And I just wanted to take a moment here before we get too far in. And it's already been said, God means many things to different people, and God is referred to as different things by different people. And for many of us, it's a very comforting word. We've grown up with it. We're okay with it, and whatever, you know. But for many others, it can be a charged word, confusing. overwhelming, and especially if you've come out of a religious community where maybe there's been some kind of emotional or spiritual abuse or harm sometimes, that word God can be alarming and triggering. And so what I want you to do is, and what I want you to know is that whatever your history with God is, it's welcome here, including aversion to God. Because I think the mixture of, you know, tough times and good times that we've had with God makes us stronger as a community. And just allowing that to be here. Now, in the Christian tradition, God is described as one in three. And that's been something that's puzzled theologians for centuries, and I'm not going to get too far into that. But the other thing that's been common with God, again, in the Christian tradition, is the pronouns he and him. You know, God is Father. And that, again, is something that for some of us can be very comforting and very familiar. For others, not so much. And I think I've mentioned this before, but a gentleman by the name of Leonard Schlain, his last name is S-H-L-A-I-N, has written a little book called The Alphabet Versus the Goddess. And the conflict, the subtitle is The Conflict Between Word and Image. And what he does in this book, and if you don't want to read books, there's some videos about him on YouTube where he gives these talks. He talks about how the human concept and understanding has evolved as language, as letters in the alphabet has evolved. So as we have moved as a species from a storytelling, verbal communication to reading and writing, so have the depictions of God moved from female to male. And without getting into all of the neuroscience or whatever, you know, it's the when we're telling stories to each other and making depictions in art, that's mostly a right brain activity, and the act of reading and writing and all of that is a left brain activity. And the idea here with God is to just welcome and value both of that and all of that. We're not pitting one against the other or making one right or one wrong or one better and other one not so better. But it's fascinating to just consider how our conceptions of God have evolved. But then to also be remembering of this, that God can be both male and female at the same time, and neither. The idea of masculine and feminine and male and female, as we know, is, if we are honest, it's part of our human experience. But if there's a wisdom and a power and an intelligence that's out there, it's beyond it's beyond personality, beyond masculine and feminine. And for me, that's something I struggle with, because I like to think of God as having attributes of personality. You know, we can use the pronouns you and whatever. And so, you know, the idea of relating to God personally or knowing God personally in the heart makes a lot of sense. Spirit and source can seem a little impersonal and a little abstract. But the idea here is, again, all of these ideas, all of these ideas don't even begin to scratch the surface of what this thing called God can be all about. And so this is where the attributes of omnipotent, omnipresent, and omniscient can be helpful. And my hope would be, my invitation would be, that as you embrace God or think about God or not, that maybe you can find some rest and you can find some comfort in these three ideas: God being all-powerful, God being all-knowing, God being everywhere all the time. Now, even these qualities can cause trouble for us. For example, how does the idea of an omnipotent God, spirit, source, intelligence, square with human freedom and choice? You know, what's more powerful? Does God change his, her, or its mind? Is God caught by surprise at the actions and the decisions that we make? What about this idea of God being omniscient, all-knowing? Does God really know all things? Did God really know about the Holocaust, about racism, about abuse, about injustice? Huh? You know? Or what about this idea of God being everywhere, all the time? Really? What does that mean? How can that be true? What's happened in the West, and particularly Christianity, where I am most familiar and what I'm trained in, is we've developed this thing called systematic theology. Systematic theology is a way of taking all of these attributes of God and all these things I've just tried to touch on right now and organize them into a system. And it's a system that is communicated by certain propositional truths. Even these principles are propositional truths that are offered. And there's a certain limitation in that. It's helpful for our egoic mind, for our logical mind, for our rational mind to, yes, organize things into systems and put them there. But again, my point here in all of this is to recognize the limitation. Is God an operating system? Is God a system in general? I don't think so. I don't think so. So again, in your relationship, in your understanding of God, can you rest in the idea of knowing that whatever is out there, whatever is in here, is all-knowing, all-present, all-powerful, and all-good? A second reflection I'd like to offer on this is that any type of word that we use to describe the divine or the sacred is limiting. It's limiting. Do you know what the first verse in the Bible is, chronologically, as best we can tell? Any guesses?
In the beginning.
God, yes. Created,
or
was the word.
Two things going. In the beginning, God created. That's in Genesis. But in the Gospel of John, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God, and the Word was with God, and the Word did what? Became flesh and dwelt among us. Okay? Now, that's a verse that has historically been ascribed to Jesus and Jesus alone. But the idea here, really, that I think that verse is getting that is each and every one of us, as image made in the image and the likeness of the divine becoming flesh, is something that is beyond what words can describe. And so, in thinking about who God is and what he does, let's be open to thinking beyond just what words are and to live into the mystery of who things are. And put it this way, one of the things Jesus taught was that we're all children of God. But you know what? That's something I just learned the other day. God doesn't have any grandchildren. Any grandparents in here? Yeah. Yeah. God doesn't have any grandchildren. And what that says to me is that all of us, as children of God, children of the divine, children of the transcendent, we are all finding our own path to him, her, or it. And all of those paths are unique and special. They're not all the same. And I think sometimes communities like this, the name Unity, we get confused and people look on the outside and think, oh, you guys just put everything in a blender and think everything's the same. And that's a valid criticism. I just want to say that when I think about that, it's not the same. All paths are valid. All paths are useful. All paths are equal in as much as they help you and help our community, but they're not all the same. Christianity is not the same as Islam, is not the same as Judaism, is not the same as Buddhism, is not the same as Hinduism, is not the same as Native American spirituality. They're all different, and they look different, and they sound different, and in and of themselves, they're all beautiful. What we try to do here, at least what I try to do in my life, and this is coming from my background as a musician, is to allow all of those expressions of faith and spirituality to be present, and then when they all play together, it's like a giant symphony. And again, you know, a flute is not a violin, is not a clarinet, is not a trombone, is not a drum, you know, and each of those instruments by themselves are wonderful. And when they all play together, oh, it's beautiful. And I would just say they all lead to the same place, but very different paths. All right. So, what about this idea then of the presence of God dwelling in each person? The presence of God dwelling in each person, not some people, not only the ones that we like, but all people, each and every person. What God loves, God becomes. In the book of Genesis, it talks about God creating everything out of love, out of purpose and intention. How God did that, I don't know. And science offers just more and more amazing answers about it. But that someone, something intended that, tells me that there's more to this life and more to this existence than just fluke chance. There is a purpose. There is a meaning to your life, to my life, to our life here for such a time as this. But how do we experience this? How do we experience the presence of God being in each and every person? In Matthew chapter 25, Jesus told a parable that many people familiar with Christianity know about, the sheep and the goats. The parable of the sheep and the goats. Anybody familiar with that story? Yeah. So you're nodding your head and you're, oh boy, I don't want to hear this story again. Because it's one of those stories that's been used to dangle people over the fires of hell. And you better be a sheep and you better not be a goat, because the sheep are going north and the goats are going south when they die. Okay? But this is a parable about the end times. And when I think of end times, it's not just end times chronologically coming at some calendar date in the near future out there, but it's the judgment that happens within, the working of the divine within. And he talked about the fact that there will be sheep and there will be goats. And he goes on to elaborate that whenever you have fed the hungry, visited the sick, took care of the needy, visited the prisoners, that you did it unto Jesus. And the people in the story asked, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you? When did we see you naked and in need of clothing? When did we see you in the hospital? And you remember what Jesus' response was? I tell you, to the extent that you've done this to the least of the brothers and sisters of mine, you've done it unto me. But you know what I find fascinating in that story? Fascinating? Is the question, when? When? The people encountering Jesus spiritually didn't know they were doing it. And I got to tell you, for a minister, that flies in the face of every ounce of logic that I want to do. Why? Because I want to be involved in good works. I want to know that they're happening. I want to know what's happening. I want to know that, hey, we're right on the mark. You know, and it just in our Western society, what do? How do we know we're being successful, right? We've got to measure our impact and our success. We've got to look at everything that happens. And my point here is not to pour a wet blanket on any of that. I think all of that is useful and good. But to remind you and me that I think the love in your life has impacts far beyond what you may know and see. And as you go through life, you may be surprised that that person you saw in the coffee shop, that person you sat next to on the plane, that person you greeted in the grocery store, or whatever exchange of love and light that was there, had profound, profound impact. The love of God, the presence of God, the peace of God, the power of God dwells within each and every one of us. And the experience of that and the impact of that, I would offer to all of us here, myself included, is surprising. So a point of reflection for you this week might just be to offer, might just be to consider, where am I being surprised by love in my life? Where am I experiencing surprising outbreaks and interactions and expressions of love in my life? And allow that surprise to help you grow. I want to tell you a little story of how I experienced it this weekend. Not quite 24 hours ago today, I was at a wedding in San Diego that was in a Catholic church. Some of you are looking at me like, oh boy. Yeah, that's what I was too, going back to my days as a Catholic. And in this church, the ceremony was all there with all of the ritual and incense, and it was a wedding mass. And it took me back to my days growing up in the Catholic Church. The interesting thing that I didn't expect was that almost half of the mass was said or sung in Latin. I was really surprised. And so, you know, me, I was going around poking around and saying, hey, didn't Vatican II in the 60s kind of supposed to change all of that, and have services offered in common English? And one of the leaders of the church said, yes, but the upcoming generation, my kids and yours, they're pulling back toward wanting some of the masses in Latin. Are you kidding me? Really? And then, that's exactly right. Yeah, are we going backwards? Right, what's going on here? But I thought, I don't know if I told you all, but my son, my 30-year-old son, has left the church where I pastored for many, many years before coming here, and is becoming Eastern Orthodox. And and we have these amazing conversations. Many people that you and I would call conservative, he would say too liberal. I mean, he's just moving so far, right? But the idea is that going back to orthodoxy in the Christian expression invites this idea of what they call the real presence of Christ in the Mass, in the mystery, in the liturgy, in the songs, and everything that's going on, the real presence of Christ. Here, we use the language of Christ consciousness. Christ consciousness, the awareness of the divine, the good, the value, and the worth of everyone and everything. And it was fascinating to me to go to be a part of all of that. I sat through the service and I was numb. It would be the best way. I was just numb by it all. I really didn't feel anything. And then afterwards, we went to a reception at the bride's family. The bride was one of 15 children. Wow. 15 children. Yeah. And it was at a family ranch, like a 400-acre ranch out in Timbuktu, somewhere in Southern California. My judgments were going crazy. This is like Amish meets Southern California. You know, it's like, what in the world? What in the world is going on here? And I had no idea. I had no idea what to expect, what this would be. Of course, I had all my judgments about what, you know, people like this do and are like and whatever. And so I was just a little apprehensive and just not knowing what I would expect. Well, when I got out there, a couple of things happened. Number one, the father-daughter dance and the mother-groom dance. Those always just moved me to tears as a dad. I'm just like, oh, it's just so beautiful. And I was just so caught up by the presence of love. And then I had two conversations that just completely surprised me and made me, first of all, aware of some of the judgments and the walls that I was putting up against this community, but also the reminder that underneath those labels and those experiences and how we live, we want the same thing.
Yep.
It was this wonderful conversation with a husband and wife, and the dad was a Boy Scout leader and spent many of his years helping mentor young boys. And one of the things he and his wife were telling me was the special role that he had in helping young men come of age. In Southern California, the presence of helicopter moms and helicopter dads, very, very strong. I know that from my brother who lives in the Bay Area. And it was funny, we got talking about just the importance of helping young men in rites of passage. Other cultures have very strong rites of initiation for, you know, boys to grow into manhood. In America and in the West, we've lost that. And so this couple really had a significant impact in working with these boys and in working with the parents, helping the parents to let go and allow the kids to experience some of the realities of adult life. It was a wonderful conversation and a place that we had a rich point of connection. The second conversation I had was around the dinner table with a gay couple, two men who'd been together 35 years and married 7 years. And it was a beautiful love story. And you know what they told me the secret to their relationship was in any committed relationship? Anybody have any guesses?
Silence.
I didn't see that coming, but that's a good one. Yeah, there's a there is a place for silence. Yeah, zip it. Yeah. But you know what it was?
What?
Something that just happened here.
Humor.
Laughter. Exactly. Laughter. Humor. And we just laughed. As they listened to my story, my personal story of spiritual deconstruction and reconstruction, I mean, we just laughed. And we had a great time. Here it is. It's a point of connection in a community that maybe had I not had a personal invitation, I don't know that I would have wanted to go there. Now, I'm not saying this to make myself up to be some great spiritual giant, because I am just as prone to avoiding some of those places and people that I don't get or that I don't understand. And I was reminded that when I find myself in those situations, as much as possible to keep your heart open. And to realize that underneath the labels, underneath the politics, underneath the things that we think divide us, is a spiritual hunger. I have this crazy thought that as dysfunctional as our country is right now, politically, and it is, I think this could also be one of our greatest moments as a country. If we can learn to hold the polarities of our differing political views. Right before, on the drive out to this 15 kid family in the thing, I had heard something about Donald Trump offering some kind of kid bonus or child bonus, you know, for every child after 5, you get $1,000 or something like that. And I'm like going, what? You know, what is this all about? But here's the idea. Again, we're promoting love and family and community and being together. And if we can develop the capacity in love to hold those polarities there, our sense of connection with each other is going to expand. And our understanding of God is going to expand. All right, let me just get back on track here. I'm going to skip that one for now. let me offer you, just in the time that remains here, three principles that can help you find love with God and with each other. The first one is this: God is always outgrowing the containers that we make. The containers we put him, her, he, she, it, spirit, source in. The commandment that I blew by earlier was from Exodus 23, where God says, "You shall have no other gods before me." Again, I can talk so much about that. You know, this isn't a command, don't do this, or else you're going to go to hell when you die. No. But it's an invitation to be reminded of and to be aware of the many ways that we try to put God into containers that fit the way that we think. And God, especially as the expression of love, is always breaking those containers apart. Always. Can you be open to that? Sometimes the breaking open of those containers can be painful. And it's not so much about our experience with pain that can get in the way, but our fear of pain. That's where community can be so helpful. But look for those areas in your life, in your experience, where is my conception of God that I've had all my life being expanded? Even in this one, we who aspire to be open and loving to everything, I think there's ways that love is going to continue to break open some of the containers that we've put God in. Can we be open to that? That's that quality of self-reflection that I said a few weeks ago is so important. Without self-reflecting, without evaluating, anything that we make can become an idol. And the danger of that isn't some kind of punishment, but it takes us away from the life and the love of God that is working today. Secondly, look beyond the truth of the story and turn to the truth in story. I think one of the things that's growing today and especially talking about God and faith and spirituality, is a movement away from propositional truth that I grew up with, and maybe many of you did, to storytelling. Storytelling. Think of your own spiritual autobiography. Think of your own spiritual story. Think of other spiritual stories and listen to them. But here's the catch. Don't get caught up in looking for the truth of the story. Look for the truth in your story. When it comes to love, when it comes to the kingdom of heaven and God, we can't fact-check our way into that. Not that there's not a place for that. But I think oftentimes we get tripped up, especially in many of the Bible myths of the Old and New Testaments. Did that really happen? How could that happen? Whatever. We miss the point, and we're trying to find the truth of the story instead of looking for the truth in the story. We're going to talk a lot more about that when I've got a message brewing about the wisdom of the Bible and how the Bible can be helpful for us in that. So that's helpful. Lastly, remember this. We are healed by and in faith. Faith is that obscure certainty that the divine is within each one of us. Each one of us. When we find ourselves lost and maybe disoriented or a little off track, this is what I love about our services and being able to meditate and sing and be together. It's one of many practices out there to come back together to the love that we have, and not just the love that we have, but the love that we are. And when we find ourselves being a little shaken, a little unsure of what's going on, we can come back and connect again and realize that, yes, we are. Love is not just something out there to go and find and to go and get. Love is something to return to and claim in ourselves and with each other. And so with that, I'm looking forward to watching, to seeing today and even in the days to come, the many, many ways that we are going to live love and uplift lives as a community. Yes? Amen?
Yes.
So it is. Thank you.
The light of a thousand suns shine through. Live the life of grace that you were meant to. May the light of a thousand suns shine through. Live the life of grace that you were meant to. Can you feel it?
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 In your heart. Can you feel it? Open your heart. Open your heart. Can you feel it? Open your heart. Open your heart. Open your heart. Can you feel it? Unsung, why hey guru? Unsung, why hey guru?